welcome back to North Idaho Now. I got a little twang in there. I didn't mean to do that at all. Yeah. This is episode 24 for April 23rd. Chance Watson and Josh McDonald bring you the news today. Not Madison Hardy. Madison is slacking.
She selfishly decided to take some vacation.
Who takes vacation? Who does that in our business? Josh, who is sponsoring us today?
This episode is brought to you by Hecla Mining Company. Hecla Mining Company is a leading low-cost silver producer with operating silver mines in Alaska, Idaho, and Mexico, as well as a growing gold producer with operating mines in Quebec, Canada, and Nevada. They are the largest primary silver producer in the United States, responsible for one-third of the silver produced in our nation. Their philosophy is to operate mines safely by promoting a deeply rooted, value-based culture, leveraging mining skills developed over the company's long history, and by innovating new practices. To learn more about Hecla Mining Company, please visit Hecla-mining.com.
And they got some pretty good drills with Hecla going down deep in the mines.
They're real down.
So speaking of having to drill real deep down, if there was an asteroid hurtling toward the Earth right now, Josh,
who would you call?
Elon Musk.
Well, yeah, right now Elon Musk
could
be the only
Elon Musk do a real life Armageddon? Like if there's an asteroid barreling toward the Earth right now and they're like, Elon, we need you to assemble a crack team.
Help me, Elon Musk. You're my only hope.
Could he assemble a crack team?
He already probably has that team assembled.
You think so?
Let's be honest. I bet he does.
Knowing him,
he's already prepared for it.
It's like on a speed dial.
Yeah.
Just in case there's some Armageddon type stuff.
Joe Biden probably has like a button. The president's office, the Oval Office, has a button, and it's like the Elon Musk emergency button.
Mm-hmm.
Help, we need the smartest, richest guy. And it's like, it's like calling Tony Stark.
Right.
I am Elon Musk. Like, he is that guy.
Uh-huh.
But in cool news, Elon Musk's Starlink,
yes,
launch, or SpaceX.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Starlink is
part
getting,
of space.
Yeah.
Launched four astronauts yesterday,
mm-hmm,
to the International Space Station.
Mm-hmm.
What are they doing up there?
Experimenting on. Basically, I know it's like they're doing experiments on seeing how humans can operate in space and how certain things react in space, like how plants can grow in space and how humans, you know, can last on a long term up there. Like, we learned how you have to throw them in that, you have to do constant exercises because when you're floating around in space, your muscles don't do anything. So
your muscles atrophy.
Yeah. So there are some things of that nature. Okay. But eventually they're going to build that moon base.
Oh boy.
That'd be cool.
That would be kind of cool.
I'd love to see the moon base.
I also believe that Elon Musk is going to be the guy that lands a person on Mars.
Oh, totally. In his lifetime, in our lifetime, I don't know, but like,
oh, yeah,
based on his.
Oh yeah. Remember like 3 years ago, SpaceX and Starlink was just something he was talking about.
Yeah, that's true.
And he's done it.
That's fair.
Somehow he has, what does he do that he's just like, yeah, I'm going to do this. And people are like, is space not regulated? Like, if you can get to space, are you allowed to go to space?
Well,
or do
yeah,
you
what
have
they,
to go through the proper?
Who's going to do anything?
Well, right.
But like, if you get through the atmosphere, it's not like there's a police force.
Right, but wouldn't you think, like, the government would be like, hey, sir, you can't launch that missile off the United States, or that rocket into space off the United States soil.
Technically
I can. I own this property.
Right.
I own this rocket. These people have all signed a hold harmless agreement. I'm paying them well.
Well,
but can the United States government say, well, you're going to pass through restricted airspace?
In not to compare him to the emperor, but he would look at them and say, I am the Senate.
Right. Elon Musk goes, okay, well, if you catch me.
Right.
My rocket.
Right.
Stop my rocket.
Elon Musk in press release today said he's going to go through it anyway because, quote, what are they going to do about it anyway?
Yeah. I have more money than all of you.
Combined.
Yeah. What do you do again? And if Elon, by some chance, is listening to this podcast,
mm-hmm,
big fans. Big fans
oh, yeah,
of your
yeah,
no-nonsense, do-whatever-you-want attitude.
He's got – and then, I mean, on top of that, he probably has more money all of them in just Dogecoin. Not even an actual, like, money.
He's wasted enough of his money in fake money that he is still richer than all of us.
Correct.
In both types.
Correct. He has more fake money than we have in our actual like lives.
Yes, absolutely.
Like actual like physical money that you'd put under a mattress or something.
Oh God.
I could see that. But so on this occasion, on this, I guess it's not a historic occasion. They've sent stuff to the International Station.
I don't know that a private citizen ever has.
Yeah, that's a good point.
That's what he is. Good point.
They have really cool spacesuits. Have you seen those? They're not the standard like domed ones from the 70s. I actually watched a documentary on it.
Do they look like Master Chief?
Well, the no, much more Star Trek-y. But the spacesuits, like one of the reasons why NASA like space travel was pushed off for so long is the spacesuits. They had been using the same spacesuit since like the 70s, right? Because they cost so much to make new ones. So they just were repurposing the same ones over and over and over and over.
You got to put on like Neil Armstrong's sweaty
yes
spacesuit.
Yes.
Oh.
Correct.
Fantastic.
It's one small smell for man.
One giant track for mankind.
There you go.
So we'll talk today. We're going to talk a little space movie. And when we talk space movie, we're not talking necessarily your sci-fi. We're not talking Star Wars.
No, we're not talking Star Wars.
We're not talking even necessarily
battle. We're not talking Battlestar Galactica. We're not talking.
Yeah,
we're talking like terrestrial, like Earth movies that kind of loosely are based on
things
that, humans getting off of this planet.
Yeah. And so to kick
like
that
Interstellar,
off,
for example.
Yes.
Or Armageddon, as I mentioned earlier.
Right.
Which great movie.
Well, so what are your favorite space movies?
Well, I'm gonna be technical on this one, and I'm gonna say Star Trek because there are technically many Star Trek movies.
That's true,
and they are based on Earth. And as we mentioned before we started recording, there's some pseudoscience, very theoretical science.
Yes,
I say pseudoscience implies that it's just, you know, like it goes because we've got stuff, you know, like Star Wars, it's never explained how any of that stuff works. At least they try to make up something in Star Trek, which you can, you know, they try. Yeah. Good for them. So I would probably say Star Trek is number one in terms of that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And as George Lucas put it, really, because of course with sweaty nerds, it's the argument Star Trek versus Star Wars. George Lucas has always argued that you can't compare the two because Star Trek is actually like based on like science and trying to like be, you know, philosophical and trying to like solve the world's problems and like looking into the future.
Star Wars is fantasy.
Star Wars is Shakespeare in space. I think he referred to it, or like a play in space.
Space opera.
Yeah. I think that's exactly what he said. Yeah. Something like that. So he just really like didn't like comparing the two.
Okay. Great space movie.
Yeah,
what do you got? Wonder if you've ever seen it. Event Horizon.
Yes, Event Horizon, very good.
Lawrence Fishburne.
Yep.
Sam Neill. The rescue crew investigates a spaceship that disappeared into a black hole and then has since returned.
Mm-hmm.
There's a horror component to it.
Yep.
That one is probably up there. It's in my top four. I've dropped my top four here.
Actually, I'm going to answer my own question here, but I was about to ask, why are so many space movies like that have a horror component? Like Alien?
It's the fear of the unknown.
Yeah.
It's absolutely the fear of the unknown.
Yeah. Well, and you're surrounded by basically certain death.
Right.
Really, if like anything goes wrong.
Right. You're stuck.
Yeah.
Most of the time
you're stuck. Yeah, I could buy that. It's not like you can just get out of the ship.
Right. It's not a, if I could just see the harbor, I could jump off this boat and swim to land. Yeah,
exactly.
No, if you jump off this boat, you are going to have problems.
Right.
What's your, what else you got?
I would also have to go, you have to mention the classic, Space Odyssey.
Which 2001 was a really big letdown because it was nowhere near what the Space Odyssey said it was going to be.
Mm-hmm.
Classic. What is it? HAL 5000 or whatever.
Exactly. I think maybe it doesn't actually necessarily stand up to today, but it I think it started the genre.
It's like a 1980.
It's movie? It's one of the best that started the genre and actually like, you know, it's like. Not to besmirch the name of The Matrix in any way, but like when The Matrix came out, you're like, wow, this the special effects are like amazing.
Right.
And it like kind of set the standard for what special effects was going to look like moving forward.
I would then shift gears and go Apollo 13.
Ooh, yeah.
As a space movie and as a biopic and top to bottom, great cast. The story is a horrifying story. And realistically, when you talk horrifying stories, like we talk about certain death.
Mm.
Like,
what's the one with Will Robinson?
Oh, space, Lost in Space.
There you go.
Danger, Will Robinson.
Exactly. Danger.
Yeah, the movie, terrible. The new TV show, very good.
Not too bad.
Here's one that doesn't get enough credit. Titan AE.
Not familiar with it.
Animated.
Okay.
Amazing voice cast.
Mm.
And very heavily, I mean, they fly through like an asteroid field, into like one of those, like what the clouds, the space mm-hmm. clouds, mm-hmm. you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, yeah.
That one, it's animated. It's good. It's probably early thousands, maybe late 90s even.
Okay.
Definitely worth checking out. But I think you and I both know that nothing, I mean, the space movie that's defined our generation has to be Armageddon.
Yeah. Yeah, and even that's a little older too. I mean, more recent ones that received notable. We said Interstellar earlier. Solid movie on its own. The Martian is okay. Not terrible.
Right.
Not bad though. But
gearing up to go to space.
But Armageddon is. I mean, like it's set the cliche space movie trope, like asteroids heading to Earth, selfless sacrifice. Like it had literally everything. In it that
some guys who are astronauts who know what they're doing and other guys who are just there because they work on a drilling rig and they know how to do this better than and you cannot forget the soundtrack
is fantastic. The cast was all star. It was essentially Ocean's 13 in space.
I mean, let's be honest, no one can hear
or Ocean's 11,
no one can hear this and not get a little misty eyed.
Yep.
All you picture is Liv Tyler crying. That's all I picture.
Yep. It's all you can, really.
Which is funny that Liv Tyler was in that movie and her dad, Steven Tyler, was the one singing that song.
Yeah.
So let's just point out.
There's a lot of cool fun fact trivia of that movie.
Armageddon is a solid movie.
It is. It really is. They don't want to pay taxes. Ever. Which, it's such an appropriate request. Like,
Is that Steve Buscemi? Who requests that?
They all do.
Yeah.
They all have their own individual ones. But at the end, they all don't want to pay taxes ever. Which is a very reasonable request for what they were doing. And it's so appropriate. Like that's something the government can do. Like, yeah, okay.
We can make that happen.
Yeah, we could probably do that.
Perfect.
Fine.
Oh gosh. Space movies.
Space movies are good. We also need to, just because of her job in it. Her role in it, Alien, the original one.
Oh yes.
Yeah. Need to mention that. I was always more of an Alien fan than a Predator fan. No, I'm not rooting for the aliens. Obviously the Predator is the good guys, but, like in terms of like the movie series, I just enjoyed Alien more.
I would venture that Aliens is a superior movie to any of the others, but if I had to rank them, I would give Aliens the nod as the best one.
Mm-hmm.
And then, Predator 1. Where they're in the jungle and Arnold Schwarzenegger and Carl Weathers, Jesse the Body Ventura is in there.
Surprised that Arnold Schwarzenegger hasn't been in many space movies. Or, oh no, where's the one where he goes to the moon or the Mars? Oh, somebody was going to get really angry if we didn't mention that movie.
Total Recall.
Yes.
He's already on Mars.
Okay. But they got off of Mars. Like, that counts.
Mars is... is Colin.
Yeah, that counts. Okay, Total Recall. That counts.
Total Recall.
Somebody's listening to this right now. They're like, if they don't mention Total Recall.
But that's so much in the sci-fi realm.
It does.
It really...
It does. You're right. That's fair.
It takes a bit of a soapy sitcom-y.
That's fair. But at the same time, I don't know.
It is good.
that's the only like sci-fi movie that I can think of that... I mean, unless you count Terminator as sci-fi, which I guess you could. That's more like dystopian. Like, that's more like dystopian. I'd put that more in a category of like Mad Max.
Movies that you would watch on the Sci-Fi Channel. I would put Terminator in.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah. But that we also can watch that movie with Kevin Bacon on the Sci-Fi Channel over and over and over, Tremors. I'm not besmirching Tremors. I'm just saying.
Really? Because it sounds like you're besmirching Tremors. Okay.
I would never besmirch the good name of Kevin Bacon, okay?
Well, you got dangerously close there, so.
Do you want to get striked?
Yeah. Just let's get into the news.
All right. Let's move into the news. We are looking at headlines from the Coeur d'Alene Post Falls Press from starting with Wednesday, April 21st. Headline, big year for a county getting bigger. This is by Madison Hardy.
Oh.
Off enjoying vacation.
Yeah.
Grappling with population development and costs, the Kootenai County Commissioners painted a picture Tuesday of a community that is changing forever. Recounting 2020 and the COVID-19 pandemic as one of the most, trying periods in our history as a nation, Commissioner Chris Filios thanked the community Tuesday morning during the Coeur d'Alene Regional Chamber of Commerce 2021 State of the County discussion. In the last decade, from 2009 to 2019, Kootenai County's population has increased from 139,390 to 165,697 as a Kootenai County native, I can attest to this. Quote, we've been growing, needless to say, at a very rapid rate, and that's probably the key challenge confronting this county, Filios said. Residential building permits are just one of the many indicators that prove the area is expanding faster than any area year prior. In 2010, the county reported 1,479 residential building permit applications submitted to the county community development office. In 2020, the department reached a permit record of 3,228. Wow. The rise continues. According to Filios, there has been 324 residential building permits since January 1st this year, a 61% increase over the 201 permits to date last year. The uptick has caused difficulties in the real estate and building community, Filios said. It has also affected the community development department from a typical three-week turnaround to 3 months. Commissioner Bill Brooks, liaison to the Kootenai County Sheriff's Office, praised newly elected Sheriff Bob Norris and his team. However, much like other departments at the county, KCSO's wages present a barrier finding and retaining employees, Brooks said. Quote, we tried very hard last year to start and get some parity with other law enforcement agencies in the area because, for a time, we were actually losing some of our deputies to local law enforcement agencies, Brooks said. These days, a deputy starts at about $25,000 a year, plus attractive benefits, but you can't pay your mortgage with a benefit. Describing the COVID-19 revolution that has changed how and where people work, Brooks touched on the county's $20 million plan to build a new justice building. Quote, for people who have never thought they could work from home to do their job are working from home and doing a very good job, Brooks said. Our space needs to have changed radically. We need first to determine specifically and then come up with a plan because the plan is going to cost money. The building aims to provide designated spaces for justice services, public defenders, prosecutors, clerks, and other legal professionals now spread out in 6 separate buildings in 5 different locations. Other accomplishments the commissioners mentioned at the meeting include $200,000 contributed to the National Academy of Sciences Lake Coeur d'Alene study. We've talked about that before in the podcast, regarding mining waste coming from our neck of the woods. Passed a 150-foot no excessive wake ordinance for Kootenai County waterways. Talked about that before on the podcast as well. Aided in securing local rural broadband infrastructure. Oh boy, we're checking all the boxes here that we've talked about. Sold the Hamilton House for the Coeur d'Alene Music Conservatory. Received $4 million for public transit. Relocated the Office of Emergency Management. Receiving a federal grant for domestic violence court mentorship. The return of in-person parental visits and using virtual school opportunities for juvenile detention, and creation of a successful first year of the snow groomer department.
Hmm. Interesting.
Sounds like we should have one of those.
Banner year.
Yeah. That's cool that they do like a state of the county thing.
Yeah. Might have to run that up the old commissioner flagpole.
Yeah. Over here in Shoshone.
Also in that same edition, Walls' Wish, this is by Bill Bewley, coming out of Hayden Lake. Ann Walls was supposed to spend 2 hours fishing on Hayden Lake Tuesday morning, but the 86-year-old was having so much fun reeling in so many kokanee, she not only stayed on the water all morning, she brushed off the media like a rock star. Quote, I'm fishing, she said by phone from her fishing charter well out of sight from Honeysuckle Beach. Quote, I don't have time for an interview. Walls' chilly but sunny day on Hayden Lake was courtesy of Auburn Crest Hospice. An avid angler in her younger days, Walls' wish was for one more chance to hook a fighting fish. She did that several times over as they caught 10 kokanee in just over 4 hours and even tossed some back that were too small. Quote, God, it was great, she said Tuesday afternoon, adding she was looking forward to a feast of smoked fish later this week. Led by fishing guide David Aggers and joined by Auburn Crest Dave Alverson and Ann's daughter Paige, the group set out about 7 a.m. in 36 degrees and on calm waters. Asked if she was excited, Walls said, fish, fish, fish. Coffee in hand, Walls was game as she switched from wheelchair to boat. Quote, we are all crazy, she said. They settled into some hot spots on the lake, and it didn't take long before the fish were biting. Myra Oakes, a CNA with Auburn Crest Hospice, has spent time with Walls in the past months. She described her as tough, determined, and humorous, someone who loves to get her hands in the dirt rather than sitting safely inside. Quote, she really just enjoys working with the land and being outside, Oakes said. Walls doesn't let aches and pains that come with aging dull her drive to enjoy life. In fact, Walls reluctantly relented to return to shore Tuesday because her oxygen tank was running low. Her fishing fancy was everything she had hoped. Quote, this is the way it's going to go, the way God intended it, she told Oakes.
You know, I don't know about Bill's choice here talking about a woman who likes to fish and throw back kokanees. Sounds really, really irresponsible.
Sounds like almost all the girls around here.
It's funny because kokanee's a beer. It's a little wordplay right there. No, it's a good story. Bill's always finding these lighthearted, fun stories from that features perspective.
Actually, and I'm not trying to be dark here, but they Power seem through. To be writing a lot of hospice stories where hospice patients are getting their final wishes granted.
That's a good thing, though.
I mean, that's a good thing. It's cool.
Yeah.
It's kind of a...
We're all going to get there one day.
It's kind of a sad beat for me.
Yeah. But silver lining kind of thing.
Good on them. Good Definitely. On them for being able to make that happen.
Survey focuses on Honeysuckle Beach congestion. This is by Craig Northrup. The city of Hayden launched a survey on its website Monday as the first step in a new attempt to tackle the growth problem that have crept onto the shores of Honeysuckle Beach. Oh, growth coming up again. Uh-oh. The survey debuted on cityofhayden.us, although the SurveyMonkey questionnaire has already been digitally distributed through QR codes and flyers circulating around town since Friday. The 13-question survey is part of a 5-month strategy to address the escalating number of visitors, both local and from abroad, who travel to the popular public shoreline destination. Quote, what the study's goal is, how do we best accommodate the boat launch users and beach users, said Melissa Cleveland, Community Development Director for the City of Hayden. This survey is just the first part of that. The survey asked respondents how often they use the Hayden Lakeside space, what facilities they use, and what reasons prevent users from enjoying Honeysuckle more. The survey also asked people to rank, in order of importance, the challenges they face when visiting the park and launch. It also asked to rank potential solutions, which could include park and ride shuttles, designated drop-off areas, and day use fees. Honeysuckle Beach is easily Hayden's most popular public outdoor attraction, as backed up by studies woven into the city's park and comprehensive plans. Passenger vehicle parking has been an issue at Honeysuckle Beach for more than a decade, as cars often stretch up East Honeysuckle Avenue for upward of a half mile during summer weekends. Concerns over those issues have run neck and neck with boat launch traffic, the increased number of boaters, combined with the often busy pedestrian traffic that can swirl around the lone boat launch, can make for some cramped shared public spaces. Quote, safety is a big challenge, Cleveland said. You've got boats getting pulled through the parking lot, boats backing up, kids walking around. We're just trying to come up with some solutions. Survey is the first in a 5-step month-long process designed to identify resident priorities with Honeysuckle Beach, workshop solutions, and narrow down the city's options before presenting this to the city council for considerations in September. The survey closes April 30th.
You want to know something?
What's up?
I have never once been right next to or in Hayden Lake.
I have. There's a shooting range up there, but I have not spent much. I haven't spent any time on Hayden Lake.
No. I have spent zero time.
Yep.
Hayden
Lake. I've been around it.
I've driven by it unknowingly.
Oh, I've done lake drives around it. I've gone to the shooting range near it.
Yeah.
No. Even the southern end of it through the Saddleback through Fernan. Lots of stuff. Just never actually been on the lake.
Interesting.
There's a lot of options. I spent a lot more time on Hauser.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Ooh. Do you want to read this
one? Yeah, I got this one. Initial success or total failure? Mad Bomber Brewing Company, located at 9265 North Government Way in Hayden, Idaho, is a veteran-owned and operated business that has been serving North Idaho since 2013. Swing by the brewery to try their newest beer back on tap, the Nitro Stout. Be sure to check out their special events throughout the week, including trivia on Mondays, all-day happy hour on Tuesdays, open mic night on Wednesdays, discounted growler fills on Thursdays, and live music on Fridays and Saturdays. Mad Bomber Brewing also offers a wide selection of ciders from North Idaho Cider for those who may not want beer. Located near Triple Play, come by and mention the podcast to receive $1 off your first beer. Mad Bomber Brewing, recklessly brewed in Hayden, Idaho.
Hmm.
Some good folks that run that place.
Well, it sounds a little slanted, but...
Depends on who you ask, I guess.
That Nitro Stout... What is that? Is it the Belching Beaver or is it their own?
Their own.
Yeah, those nitro infused stouts are good though. I do enjoy that actually.
Yes.
I'm not a dark beer guy by any stretch of the imagination.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, those are yummy.
I agree.
Thursday headlines. The air we breathe. This is by Madison Hardy. A new study by the American Lung Association found that the wildfires that routinely paint the Coeur d'Alene summer sky, a smoky haze, play a significant role in the community's outdoor air pollution.
Mm.
Based on 3 years of United States Environmental Protection data, the 2021 ALA State of the Air Report Card ranked Coeur d'Alene Spokane Valley area as the 11th worst in the nation for short-term particle pollution levels.
Yikes.
Air particle pollution can lead to several types of respiratory damage, Dr. Todd Hoopman, a pulmonologist and critical care doctor at Kootenai Health, said in an email. Quote, specifically, air pollution can result in increased levels of inflammation in the lungs, which puts people at risk for respiratory complications, including asthma and pneumonia, Hoopman said. More frequent exposures and high levels of particle exposures can result in increased levels of inflammation and subsequent damage. The study noted that people of color living in poverty, people with underlying health conditions like asthma, chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, lung cancer, cardiovascular disease, and smokers are easily vulnerable to illness and death from pollutant exposure. Quote, outdoor air pollution is particularly problematic for patients with chronic lung diseases, including COPD and asthma, Hoopman said. Older patients oftentimes can develop more severe complications from air pollution exposures, including pneumonia, hospital admission, and impaired lung function requiring oxygen usage. The ALA 2021 American Lung Association State of the Air Report Card found that Idaho, as with many Pacific Northwest and Western states, is struggling with unhealthy air quality due to wildfires. 15 of the 25 worst cities for year-round particle pollution are in the western United States, 8 of those in California, 3 in the Southwest, and 4 in the Pacific Northwest. On an everyday basis, the Idaho Department of Environmental Quality, Coeur d'Alene Regional Office Air Quality Manager Sean Sweetapple said, "The air we breathe is really good compared to that of national standards." He said he was surprised to see Coeur d'Alene on the ALA's list. Idaho DEQ Air Quality Data Bureau Chief Steve Miller said, "It's likely that the data is predominantly taken from Spokane's regulatory monitors. Coeur d'Alene," he said, "has consistently met EPA air quality standards." Quote, "We're being lumped in," Miller said. Quote, "It's representing the bigger metropolitan statistical area. The data entry could be many, many miles away. It's certainly not our monitor." The heavy hitter for Coeur d'Alene's air quality is wildfires, Miller said. The risk, Sweetapple noted, is that wildfires are uncontrolled and can include dangerous particles. Quote, "They're finding that the impact from wildfires, although short in relative time, can affect a person's health more than we thought," Sweetapple said. "Wildfires can burn buildings, vehicles, and other things than just the forest." Miller also said the proper handling of wildfires is an all-hands-on-deck situation across multiple government agencies. He recommended that the best way to do independent research is to monitor the air quality index at www.airnow.gov. Others agreed, noting that it's essential that the public become aware of how they can cut their emitted pollution and base their outdoor activity on the level of hazardous air quality.
Whew. Interesting. Yeah, it's a long story. That was like the main one for the Thursday paper.
And we've actually, Shoshone County used to have an air quality attainment issue that we battled. And in fact, at one point,
still do kind
of. Pinehurst took the lion's share of an air quality grant funding that was available. And that money was divvied up between major cities, and Little Pinehurst here in Shoshone County actually gobbled up like 2 million of that.
Yeah. So, but no, Coeur d'Alene is, I mean, you can be out on the lake and see that smoke just holding over the place. It's crazy. And the big photo that they ran at the with this story on the Coeur d'Alene Press, it was pretty impressive.
Oh, yeah?
It was a huge photo of, like, the resort, but it's just, you could see the smoke that is just blocking it out. On a clear day, you could easily see it.
Interesting.
Yeah, very cool. All right, jumping to Friday headlines. House passes anti-indoctrination bill. This is by Craig Northrup. The Idaho legislature cleared a hurdle Thursday in the race to adjourn as the House approved a bill that would prompt public schools from what lawmakers call indoctrination. House Bill 377, the Dignity and Non-Discrimination in Public Education Bill, was fast-tracked to the House floor. The bill's language calls for K-12 schools, universities, districts, and students to, quote, respect the dignity of others, acknowledge the right of others to express differing opinions, and foster and defend intellectual honesty, freedom of inquiry and instruction, and freedom of speech and association. The House has remained mired in a debate over critical race theory, an activist theory that the country's history of racism and slavery has created a power imbalance that continues to permeate most, if not all, facets of American life. House Bill 377 specifically calls out critical race theory, saying the tenets behind the theory undermine free expression and dignity. It's a sentiment lawmakers echoed Thursday on the House floor. Quote, "We have to do something, and the longer we wait, the longer our kids are indoctrinated with this garbage," said Representative Heather Scott, Republican of Blanchard, shortly before voting in favor of the bill. Critical race theory and social justice have made their way to the forefront of a narrative in the House this session. Lawmakers have sent back, promised not to approve, an appropriations bill dedicated to teachers' salaries unless intent language was included that would prevent the teaching of social justice and critical race theory. The bill specifically prevents schools from requiring students to adhere to these theories. Because the Idaho legislature has a constitutional responsibility to approve and complete budget, that appropriations bill has to eventually pass before lawmakers can end the session. The House has been feeling that the heat from the state leaders, op-eds, and even Idaho senators eagerly waiting to go home to wrap it up. With the House passages of House Bill 737, representatives believe the appropriations bill dedicated to paying the state's teachers will now pass cleanly without additional intent language. The House Education Committee fast-tracked the bill for debate and approval to the House floor with a do-pass recommendation. The House then suspended its rules to bring House Bill 377 to the top of the agenda. It passed on a 57-12 party line vote. Quote, "Unity and diversity are not opposites," said Representative Wendy Horman, Republican of Idaho Falls, sponsor of the bill. One way we unite is by ensuring a classroom environment that is free of from discrimination and where the beliefs of each student are respected. But Democrats said House Bill 377 is a redundant bill that could theoretically be weaponized against teachers, that the Republicans' concerns over indoctrination are overstated, and that the bill disrespects teachers after one of the most challenging school years on record. Quote, "There just has not been time for our teachers to teach critical race theory," said Representative John McCroskey Democrat of Garden City. "They've worked their tails off to develop hybrid teaching for our students due to COVID." The language of the bill specifies that no school will compel a student to believe that any sex, race, ethnicity, religion, color, or national origin is inherently superior or inferior, that individuals should be adversely treated on the basis of their sex, race, ethnicity, religion, color, or national origin, or that individuals by virtue of sex, race, ethnicity, religion, color, or national origin are inherently responsible for the actions committed in the past by other members of the same sex, race, ethnicity, religion, color, or national origin. Quote, "Critical race theory isn't just teaching," Representative Ron Nate of Rexburg told the House. "It's a verb. It's activating. It's indoctrinating. Not long after, Idaho education groups released a joint statement against House Bill 377, saying the bill stifles academic freedom and caps a student's ability to think critically. Governor Brad Little released an opinion later Thursday afternoon without mentioning the bill, calling for Idahoans to support education. Quote, "Idaho public's education system is locally driven," Little said. "If parents and teachers spot something that concerns them, they should bring it to the attention of the teacher, principal, superintendent, or school board trustees and root out the problem at the local level, which is the closest and most responsive to our students and parents. Curriculum is in Idaho is always a responsibility of your local school board."
Well, I'm glad that at least Brad Little has a level head in this.
Yeah, Brad is, I mean, he's always been kind of about, he's always been about, when, regardless of the issue, he's always been, let the locals figure it out on your own local scale. What floats your boat in your community might not float the boat in somewhere else. So yeah, I think that once again, I have a positive opinion of our current governor.
Yes.
Moving on to Shoshone News Press headlines for Friday, April 23rd. Josh, you got the headline.
I did have the headline, and I believe the headline was it masks?
Masks.
Masks.
I don't know if you guys have, I don't know if you listeners have heard about masks before.
Yeah, I don't know.
On this show. We haven't talked about it.
We've never actually talked about a mask in our entire lives.
Nope.
We don't believe that to be the case. However, the discussion surrounding masks in the Kellogg School District hit a fever pitch over the last week as many parents are calling on Shoshone County's largest district to follow in the footsteps of both the Wallace and Mullen school districts. Mullen dropped their mask requirement to simply a recommendation last week, and Wallace fully adopted a recommendation after tweaking their rules at Silver Hills Elementary, but waited until earlier this week for Wallace Junior Senior High School. After the city of Kellogg decided not to renew their mask mandate moving forward, Kellogg School District patrons had hoped that the Kellogg School District Board of Trustees would make a decision similar to their neighbors at a recent school board meeting or call a special meeting to make a decision regarding the district's mask and facial covering requirement. According to Kellogg School District Superintendent Dr. Nancy Larson, masks and facial coverings were discussed at the April meeting, but after discussing timely items such as the meeting's proximity to the end of spring break and wanting to see if that changed anything, as well as taking into consideration the possibility of losing upcoming spring sports events, as well as the rite of passage events like graduation and prom, they decided to table the topic until their May 12th meeting. According to Larson, in the past few days, several parents have reached out to the district office, some with questions and some with threats, and almost all of them centered around the mask requirement. Dr. Larson also mentioned that she has had just as many folks contact her directly who are in favor of keeping the mask requirement through the school year's end, as she has had those in contact in hopes of seeing it quashed. Quote, our board has chosen to address it on May 12th, Larson said. Quote, it'll be at their discretion which way that will go. Rumors have swirled on social media outlets promising an anti-mask protest that will be held at the various schools within the Kellogg School District on today, Friday, similar to how the patrons of Coeur d'Alene School District did just a few weeks ago. Dr. Larson hopes that the people will think the other way and not disrupt the schools and educational process. Quote, it is unfortunate that anyone would choose to interrupt the educational process, Larson said. Quote, I've told my staff, in preparation of a potential protest, to remain professional and above all, to just keep teaching. Students protesting the mask requirement could be subject to disciplinary action should their protest be seen as disruptive to the schools and or classrooms learning process.
Well, as we record this right now, we know there's no protest, but well, there's like a passive protest. Some students showed up to Kellogg High School today without wearing masks. So there is that, but no like walkout kind of thing.
No walkout
as far as we know.
From what I've gathered, that wasn't part of the plans. It was just them showing up and not complying.
Not complying. Yeah. Doesn't sound like there's any there. It's kind of.
Well, and some of the parents I've talked to, I asked them, like, is this protest a single day thing or what are you guys trying to accomplish here? Mm. Because, you know, in an organized effort, you can, you know, respect an organized protest, but say they show up on Monday and some of the kids have elected to not wear their mask.
Sure.
If they're asked to and they don't comply. Mm. I mean,
it goes hand in hand with the story that we talked about before with the court. I mean, Coeur d'Alene just went through this. We read articles on this where there was protest and then there was a board meeting that will change. I don't know. With Kellogg, they've been a little more stubborn sticking to their guns on this issue more other than other school districts. So we'll see if they change their mind. The next board meeting coming up in May. I don't know. All right. That takes us into the next story on our front page here. I wrote this one, actually. This kind of sprang up on us a little bit. We didn't necessarily know it was happening,
yeah.
But the wheels moved pretty quick on this kind of thing, so we jumped right on it when it happened. Headline on the center of the page here, K-Wall Radio Tower Comes Down. I wrote this one up with the help of Josh McDonald. A small crowd could be seen gathered around the old KWOL AM 620 radio station in Osborne Thursday morning to not only watch the spectacle of work crews disassembling a 310-foot-tall tower, but also pay their respects to a once great source of local entertainment. When KWOL went dark on September 5th, 2018, it was the third oldest radio station in the state and had been a hub for mobile information over the years. Its host provided local listeners access to music, election results, school lunch menus, school closure news, regional and national news, and local sports play-by-play. Just over a month ago, Osborne Mayor Kip McGilvery and Cosmo Construction owner John Schroeder acquired the property and decided to clear out the old station/tower in order to make room for more housing. Quote, John Schroeder and I partnered on this to bring some more buildable land to the city of Osborne, and we're focused on fulfilling our dream, McGilvery said. To get the delicate job of bringing down the 74-year-old tower done, the duo brought in Casco of Idaho. Casco owner Keith Sims explained that workers arrived at the site at 7 a.m. Thursday following numerous survey visits previously. Quote, we had made probably half a dozen trips out there to try to get counterweights and guy wire weights and document as much information as we could so we could plan for success. After ruling out the simple fall it like a tree method due to safety concerns, the crews utilized a giant crane and two workers to climb the tower and disassemble it section by section. Boy, that would be frightening.
I watched some of it. It was interesting.
Yeah. The radio tower, constructed in 1947, had 21 total guy wires attached to it for support. Each one was roughly 450 feet in length, several of which were grounded in very peculiar places. Quote, the guy wires on the northwest side were in two people's backyards, and one set went through a guy's roof. I even included this photo in the story. It's a very, very 1940s. Just get it done kind of thing. If it works, right. It's not bad. Ben Backen and Sam Shepard were two longtime Casco employees, were the lucky duo that got to climb up the tower and saw away at the old steel. Initially, the plan was to release the bolts connecting the tower together, but years of rust made that method less convenient. Sims explained that they brought the tower down in four sections, the first three being roughly 40 feet in length. Cuts would be made, then the crane would do the rest and haul off the severed pieces. By 12:45, the last section had hit the ground with no injuries or damage. Moving forward, the steel from the tower will be recycled by McGilvery Environmental. They already do that work. And the actual station building will be targeted next for demolition in the coming weeks. Quote, we're very excited to begin the process of getting the land subdivided and preparing lots for future homes, McGilvery said. KWOL in its final form came to be after Paul Robinson and other investors bought the station from Lee Black in the fall of 1971 and reopened the station in 1972. In 1977, Robinson hired his right-hand man, George White, and the two rode the waves together until 2018. There's a lot of other very interesting history stuff, KWOL, that's in this story that Josh threw in there from an old story. If you're interested in it, check out the full thing.
Yeah, I actually worked for KWOL for a while.
You so, did. You called some games for him.
Yeah, about, I think, four or five sports seasons, football and basketball. Did a lot of up and down the road with guys like Chris Johnson and Corey Foster and even some older guys in Wallace. So pretty cool.
Kind of a cool thing to call sports on the radio.
Yeah.
Yep.
Moving on to the Bonner County Daily Bee. Headlines from Wednesday, April 21st. Acosta gets life in Bristow murder. This is by Keith Kinnaird. Out of Sandpoint, First District Judge Barbara Buchanan imposed a life sentence Tuesday against a Ponderé man accused of strangling Tammy Ray Bristow in 1987.
Cold case.
Yes. William Billy Ray Acosta showed no outward reaction when the sentence was handed down in the First District Court. The sentencing hearing was live streamed for the public on YouTube while a small clutch of Bristow's family and friends sat in the courtroom's gallery. Acosta, 51, was ordered to serve 20 years of the sentence before becoming eligible for parole. The body of Bristow, 19, was found by her boyfriend at her South Sandpoint apartment. Bristow had been choked to death with a length of cord tensioned by a piece of wood, according to archival news accounts. Acosta emerged as a suspect only after his DNA was matched to DNA evidence collected from beneath Bristow's fingernails. Authorities obtained Acosta's genetic fingerprint after he was convicted of an unrelated crime long after Bristow was slain. A Bonner County grand jury indicted on a charge of Bristow on a charge of first-degree murder in 2019, and he, or I'm sorry, indicted a Acosta on a charge of first-degree murder in 2019, and he entered into mediation to resolve the case as it neared trial. The negotiations produced an amended charge of second-degree murder and Acosta's entry of an Alford plea. Under such plea, a defendant admits no wrongdoing but concedes a guilty plea or a guilty verdict could result following a trial. The plea is treated no differently than a standard plea of guilt at sentencing. Cindy Reed, a friend of Bristow's, told the court that she had been haunted by Bristow's death and racked with guilt because she was the last person to see her alive. Reed said she second guesses whether she could have or should have stayed overnight with Bristow instead of dropping her off and into a cold-blooded killer's web. Bristow's mother, Gayla Babcock, said she vividly recalls hearing her daughter's sweet voice the last time they spoke and her fondness for babies. Babcock said she struggles against waves of grief that wash over her when reminded of Tammy or the things she will never get to experience with her. Babcock called Acosta to serve not a day less than 32 years, the span of time separating her daughter's killing and Acosta's arrest. Marshall said Acosta appeared to be motivated by the theft of $96, money Acosta and his girlfriend paid to Bristow for babysitting. He recommended Acosta be served with a lifelong prison sentence due to the atrociousness of the killing and its resulting impact on Bristow's family. Yeah.
Interesting stuff there.
Yeah. That is a crazy, crazy story with a, I don't want to say a good conclusion, but at least a little modicum of justice for the family.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, looking on the bright side, I guess.
Yeah.
Moving to Thursday, April 22nd, Festival at Sandpoint prepares for concerts. I love the Festival at Sandpoint. They always have a good lineup up there. That's by Rachel Sun. Plans for this year's Festival at Sandpoint are streaming ahead, with added precautions to create social distancing and safety. One major change, said Executive Director Ali Berensky, is that the festival will be expanded to Lakeview Park behind the grandstands to allow for increased social distancing and space for seating. Quote, this year we won't offer dance-style concerts, she said, but everyone is welcome to dance at their blanket or pod. The festival is scheduled for July 29th to August 8th. Will be held in accordance with Panhandle Health's guidelines, Baranski said. There will also be a safety page with information on the website. The festival will be announcing its artist lineup throughout May, starting May 3rd. Quote, we're excited about the talent that we have that we were able to confirm during a year with where so many artists are not touring, she said. Baranski said. The later than normal announcements are due to be due to an abundance of caution as agencies book artists later than they normally would because of the pandemic. I joke that our talent buyer had to work about 10 times harder because it's just a moving target. Everyone's routes and dates and tours have probably changed 15 times. As with the past years, no weapons will be allowed on the premises. There will also be additional policy changes to increase overall security. One change to the festival that it will be partially held on artificial turf. Because of that, glass will not be allowed in order to prevent damage to the turf, with exception of wine bottles. The wine tasting event will be adapted, and there will be will not be a brew fest. Oh, it's sad to see. Another change, she said, is that the festival will be rolling out the Noble app to order food, beverages, merchandise, and chairs. The app is one of the biggest changes making the festival possible, Baranski said. You can, quote, you can browse menus from home, order ahead, or order for a specific time, she said. The app will send notifications when orders are ready, so there won't be a need to bring cash or wait in lines. As in previous years, attendees are also welcome to bring their own food. One of the biggest goals of moving forward, Baranski said, is to create a more fiscally sustainable event. After a financially unsuccessful 2019 season and the cancellation of the 2020 event, the festival staff ran for months off of part-time and volunteer work. Quote, I think one misconception with the festival is that we make a lot of money. They don't realize how much artists cost, she said. Ticket sales tend to only cover the cost of artists, but not the operational costs. Well, I think it's cool at least that the festival is coming back.
Yeah. Also in that Thursday paper, tentative cause of Segal fire identified. This is by Carolyn Lobsinger. A tentative cause has been identified in connection with a Tuesday house fire, which completely gutted the Mountain Ridge Drive area, Selkirk Fire Rescue and EMS officials said. The home was heavily engulfed in fire when Selkirk crews arrived. Dale Hopkins, Selkirk Fire Chief, said. The structure is a complete loss, he said. Quote, in talking to the homeowner, it was either a chimney fire or a fire in the wall behind the chimney, Hopkins said. By the time the homeowner realized he had a fire, it was already in the walls. Hopkins said the individual reported the fire from a neighbor's home. Hopkins said he did not have an estimated value of the home or the items lost in the fire. Responding to the fire were Selkirk crews from Segal, Sandpoint, and Westside Fire Stations, Northside Fire, and the Idaho Department of Lands. Selkirk, Westside, and Northside crews focused on the structure fire, while IDL crews patrolled the home's perimeter to ensure that the fire did not spread into the surrounding forest interface. Fire crews were able to keep the fire contained to the structure. While it is uncertain exactly how the fire started, Hopkins said it's always good practice to ensure regular chimney cleaning and inspections. In this case, Hopkins added the homeowner had had the chimney cleaned in the fall. Quote, sometimes, I'm not saying it's the case here, when there's burning over the winter, things can happen, he added. Quote, we just don't know yet.
We're gonna have a fire story coming up here in the Shoshone paper next Tuesday. Hopefully this doesn't continue, but boy, it seems like we're in for a long hell of a fire season.
Yeah.
Moving on to Friday, April 23rd headlines, LPOIC Spring Derby kicks off on Saturday. This is by Carolyn Lobsinger. There will be a lot of happy anglers on the lake Saturday. A year after the Spring Derby was canceled due to the COVID-19 pandemic, it's a different story this year as Lake Ponderay Idaho Club offers officials announced the event that would kick off Saturday, April 24th, and runs until 6 p.m. on May 2nd. Quote, last year we were able to hold our other two derbies, but our Spring Derby had never been canceled before and was part of a very long 70-plus year tradition, and, for as long as I can remember, a really big thing for Lake Ponderay anglers, said club's Dave Gillespie. I am sure that there will be a lot of happy anglers out on the lake on Saturday. Lake Ponderay Idaho Club derbies have been a tradition in the region since the late 1940s, more than 70 years, depending on which derby you start with. Gillespie said that the story is that the derby started in 1947 after an earlier 1940s planting of Girard rainbows from Canada, which brought the rainbows to Lake Ponderay. 1948, Gillespie said the Bonner County Sportsman Club put on another derby that lasted the entire Lake Ponderay season, and that a few more were put on by the city of Sandpoint around that time. Gillespie said the term Red Hat Days can be connected to the earliest of those city-held derbies and is the, quote, beginning of the red hats and jackets that we wear proudly today. The 2020 Spring Derby, which is a favorite of both local anglers and those out and from the area, was canceled in March 2020 after Jim Fredericks, chief of Idaho Department of Fish and Game's Bureau of Fisheries, told fishing tournament directors the officials had to make the difficult choice of decision to rescind permits for such events. Fredericks wrote the tournament directors after being approached for guidance on what to do in the wake of the novella coronavirus pandemic gripping the county, the country, and world. This year, however, the derby can go on and the lake will see plenty of anglers hoping to catch, quote, the big one. It's mostly a sense of relief that it will take place this year, Gillespie said.
Awesome.
Yes.
Yeah. People like fishing.
I enjoy it. I used to be a bait fisherman and it's a little too slow paced for me, but I have recently gotten into fly fishing and there is something relaxing about it.
Ew, gross.
You don't like fishing, Josh?
Not even a little bit.
Really?
It's boring.
Well, so fly fishing is a lot. Like I said, big fishing, you sit there, you're waiting for something to happen.
So big fishing is boring, you wait. Fly fishing, you have to literally walk out into the middle of the river.
You don't have to. Yeah. You don't have to. You can.
Yuck. Yuck. Bonner's Ferry Herald headlines for their loan paper this week on Thursday. Headline, City Council discusses affordable housing options. This is by Rose Shababy. That's just the coolest name.
Mm-hmm.
Shababy. Out of Bonner's Ferry, a lack of affordable housing was a key topic of conversation at Tuesday night's City Council meeting. Contract planner Claire Marley presented a new proposal from the Planning and Zoning Commission to make amendments to city zoning codes to allow for accessory dwelling units, ADUs, the result of a recent fair housing assessment. ADUs are smaller detached or attached housing units placed on the same lot or parcel as the primary dwelling without counting against density standards. They would only be allowed in residential zones, and the proposed ordinance would apply to the city of Bonner's Ferry only. The discussion addressed standards for the possible new ADU ordinance, which would include a maximum size of 800 square feet or 40% of the primary home, whichever is less. 400 square feet minimum, maximum of two bedrooms, limit of one ADU per lot or parcel, and more. Another option considered was raising the detached unit size to 50% of the primary home. City engineer Mike Kloss also discussed the impact this would have on city water and sewer, whether these ADUs would be on a separate water meter and sewer system and how a second dwelling on a lot or parcel would affect water usage. While the land use code does not address sewer water hookup fees and other service line requirements, Klaus does recommend that ADUs be assessed with full hookup fees to ensure fairness with other housing developments such as apartments. The proposal would also make changes to setback standards of lots or parcels to provide more flexibility to the current requirements. These changes would apply to eaves, gutters, bay windows, and other above-ground features to allow for overhang into required yards. In order to address the setback standards, Marley also noted some needed yard revisions in order to define where the front of the property begins. Common wall agreements and stormwater and snowshed issues were also discussed.
Some important topics right there.
And we are probably in a very similar spot, although I would be genuinely surprised if anything like an ADU was actually proposed.
At least not anytime soon, I don't think.
Yeah, I just don't see it.
Nope. Communities are too independent.
Yep. Wow. What an episode.
What an episode. We burned through that.
There's some heavy news.
There was some heavy news this week. There was. And unfortunately, I feel like we're just going to be hearing some more about air quality and fires. I would hope not, but I ran out to a fire last night up Burke, and it seems like we're going to get into another weekend where
hope in one hand and
something in the other. Yep. And so, unfortunately, that's just how it's going to have to happen. But, we'll see where it goes.
Yeah. Hey, well, once again, we'd like to thank Hecla Mining Company for sponsoring this episode. Hecla Mining Company's philosophy is to operate mines safely by promoting a deeply rooted value-based culture, leveraging mining skills developed over the company's long history, and by innovating new practices. To learn more about Hecla Mining Company, please visit hecla-mining.com.
All right, everybody. Thanks again for listening in. We really appreciate it. Please like, comment, and share all of our stuff on social media. If you're interested in the stories we talked about today or the ones we did not, you can check us out on www.coeurdaluepress.com, shoshonenewspress.com, bonnercountydailybead.com, and bonnersferryherald.com. Please follow and subscribe to us on any podcatcher that you use. We are on all sorts of them. Recently just got added on to two different ones, Podbean and something with a very weird name that starts with a V. Verbal or something like that. It's brand new and I've never heard of it before. But a shout out to you guys who are listening to us on those platforms. Doesn't matter how you listen in, all of them are correct.
Yes.
That's it for us on Friday today. Josh and I'll be back with you guys again next week, next Tuesday. And then I don't know, maybe we'll see Madison again.
Yeah, maybe.
Perhaps.
She'll unselfishly come back from vacation.
Yeah. She better be enjoying. She better be off doing something fun.
She better be having a good time.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, everybody. Thanks again, and we'll see you next week.
Bye-bye.